Oh, it's so great to be here and see all these familiar faces. I was moved by both those musical selections. Those were really fabulous. I'm going to go back and visit both of those again. We had some great readings already about laziness, and that's what I want to talk about today, laziness. And everybody knows what laziness is, right? You know, laziness is lying around, not doing what you're supposed to do. And who better to talk about laziness than a monk? Because everybody thinks of what we do as the epitome of laziness. We sit and we meditate, and we hold retreats, and we drink our tea. We just drink our tea. You know, but our culture really seems to not value people who are lazy. We value people who are industrious, right? We value the self-made man, the Horatio Alger story, pulling ourselves up from our bootstraps. We value someone who has become successful from the fruits of their efforts. And we have that Protestant work ethic that came over with the Puritans. You know, that tells us, well, we prosper in proportion to how in alignment we are with God's will. So we work and we work and we work. And if we end up poor, well, it's because we're lazy. We're spiritually weak. We're out of favor with God. So who wants that, right? So I'm not going to be lazy. And we can turn to our old nemesis, the Nazis, who have the ultimate expression of this. You know, they cynically put across the gate of Auschwitz, translation is, work sets you free. So cruel. They worked people to death. Wow. So we have this really strong work ethic. And laziness is seen as something that's really, really bad. So you might think that I was going to talk about, you know, laziness and tell you not to be lazy, right? Because that's what we've been hearing all this time, is don't be lazy or things will be really terrible. But you've heard that enough. You hear that every day. So instead of another talk that tells you some iteration of don't just sit there, do something, I'd like to give a talk that tells you the opposite. Don't just do something, sit there. Don't just do something, sit there. So the first question that comes up for me is, why should we care about any of this, right? Why shouldn't we just lie in bed all day long and eat bonbons and watch Netflix? Wouldn't that be a great life? We just sit there and sit there and sit there and indulge. But you know, being a monk, I'm going to put it in terms of a contemplative practice. I think the real question is here, not why don't we lie in bed and eat bonbons, but why should we not show up for our spiritual practice? I mean, are we neglecting something really important here by doing the metaphorical eating of bonbons and watching Netflix instead of our spiritual practice? So here's why I care. Here's why I care about this. Without the clarity that arises from a contemplative practice, we experience the world as just this chaotic river of events that comes at us. And those events trigger automatic reactions from us. Automatic reactions from our mind, from our body, from our emotions. And without a contemplative practice, we become nothing more than a machine. You know, if that chaotic river of events is bringing all these things to our lives, every time event A comes by, we respond with response A. Every time event B comes by, we respond automatically with response B, and so on. We're sort of a machine, a habit machine. And machines aren't alive. So if we want to be alive, a contemplative practice really helps us break that cycle of automatic responses and gives us choice. So this is why I care. This is why I care about this question, about what is laziness and how do we find a balance between doing too little and doing too much so that life doesn't control us and that we are alive. And I think I've cared about this question my whole life, actually. I'm a little bit strange. Maybe it never occurred to you, but for some reason it occurred to me at a young age. I've always carried this question in my mind. What should I do? What should I do? How should I respond to that river of events in my life? Do I do what that person tells me to do or not? Do I follow that path or not? What do I do? So I think of that question, what should I do, as my koan? You know, in Zen we have koans that are questions that don't necessarily have an answer, but it's a question we hold in our hearts continuously, and we look for new answers all the time. So I've had this koan, what should I do, before I'd ever heard the word koan, but here it is. It's working on me, and it continues to work on me. So when I ask that question, what should I do? What should I do? It means that I can shift that habitual reaction machine inside of me, that every time event A flows down that river to me, that I do action A. I can ask, what should I do? And I'm free. So that's basically what I want to talk about. I want to talk about laziness in a new way. Laziness being the balance between doing too little and doing too much. Laziness is the balance between doing too little and doing too much. So let's take those one at a time. Let's talk about doing too little first, because that's really kind of what we think about when we think about laziness, is doing too little. In the order in which I am ordained, we have a set of 14 precepts. And the seventh of those precepts says in part this: aware that life is available only in the present moment, and that it is possible to live happily in the here and now. I'm committed to training myself to live deeply each moment of daily life. I'm committed to training myself to live deeply each moment of daily life. So if I'm doing too little, then I'm not training myself, and I'm not living deeply. So for me, this is the standard for which I judge when I'm doing too little. Am I training myself towards a happier, more productive life, and am I living deeply? Now, luckily, the person who wrote this precept, Thich Nhat Hanh, had a life that I turn to very often for example of how to do this. And we think of Thich Nhat Hanh as sort of a living saint. You know, he's really quite an incredible man, even though he's 94 now and he's had a stroke and can't speak. His presence still speaks to us. And we think of a person like that as someone who must float above life, you know, not really needing to train himself or to live deeply because he can do anything he wants. But he's had a very, very hard life. A very hard life. You know, he was in the middle of war, destruction all around him in Vietnam, lots of death, lots of loss, being put into exile. But he knew how to train himself to live deeply so that he wasn't a victim of this river of circumstances that flowed through his life. And he used that training of himself to set me free to some degree. Not to the degree he is free, but... So from some of the things that I just want to mention that he did to do that, because it's not that unlike our lives. So he was deprived of his home. He was exiled from Vietnam because he left the country to participate in the peace talks in 1966, but was not allowed to come back. And this persisted for 40 years. He couldn't go back. So I imagine that all of us have had that experience of being unhomed in some way, separated from something that we loved. So he trained himself to look deeply, and what he did was he decided that he would find home in every step that he took, that he would not take another step until In that step, he arrived home in the present moment, right where he was, that he was no longer searching for home anywhere else. He trained himself to look deeply in that way. He wrote a little poem about it, very simple poem. I have arrived, I am home, in the here and the now. I am solid, I am free. Can you imagine taking the contents of the river of chaos that comes at you and transforming it into that? Very inspiring to me. Very inspiring to me. So when I think about his life, I think, okay, he had many, many, many reasons to be angry and to despair. In other words, to be lazy, to give up, to do too little. But he didn't do that. He trained his mind to be present. So when I think about his life, I think, okay, when I'm tempted to do too little, I say, I can do this with my life. I can do this with my suffering and not be lazy. So for me, and I think for Thich Nhat Hanh, not doing too little means living deeply right where you are right now. Right here in your life, wherever you are on your path, practicing with diligence and with joy. Not doing too little means living on this knife edge between indulgent laziness and joyless self-flagellation. You know, that knife's edge between being too lazy and beating yourself up for not doing too much. So that's enough about doing too little. Let's talk about that joyless self-flagellation of overdoing, shall we? So let's talk about doing too much. And so for this, I want to tell a couple of stories. One of them is ancient and one of them is modern. So first, the ancient story. In 8th century China, Mazu was a very eager Zen student. He sat hour after hour in meditation and expended far more effort than any of his fellow monks. And then one day his teacher saw him meditating outside his hermitage and said to him, Mazu, I see you meditate more than anyone else. Why do you do that? And Mazu answered, I want to become a Buddha. So his teacher bent over and he picked up a piece of broken roof tile off the ground and a stone and began rubbing the stone on the broken roof tile. So after watching him for a while, Mazu asked him, Master, what are you doing? And the master said, I'm polishing this tile in order to make a mirror. But how can you make a mirror by polishing a tile? Mazu asked him. And his teacher said, how can you make a Buddha by practicing meditation? So poor Mazu didn't quite get it, you know, like sort of like we hear that, we go, I think there's something there, but I don't quite get it. Well, Mazu was in the same boat, right? I don't quite get it. So he asked the teacher again, well then what should I do? And his teacher replied, if your ox cart doesn't move, which do you whip? The cart or the ox? Ah, now Mazu got it. He realized by doing all this extra meditation, he was just whipping his ox cart to no effect. Just like the teacher who had picked up the tile and was rubbing it with a stone to make a mirror was having no effect. It was not going to create a mirror. And Mazu whipping his ox cart with all that meditation was not going to make himself into a Buddha. But you don't have to worry about poor Mazu. Poor Mazu went on to become one of the great Zen masters and someone who I turn to quite often in my teaching. And he was one of those Zen masters that's famous for kicking and shouting and hitting. And I could tell you lots of stories about Mazu. But Mazu was making an effort, but not making effective effort. He was trying his best to make a mirror by polishing a tile and to make himself a Buddha by excessively meditating. So while laziness can be failing to act, Mazu shows us that sometimes laziness happens when we spend our efforts doing things that don't matter. That don't matter. Just like Mazu, sometimes we waste our time whipping our ox cart. So one more story about this, a modern story. At 9/11, after the terrible terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center buildings and so many thousands of people died, again, Thich Nhat Hanh was traveling with the monastic Sangha, with the monks and nuns, and they were in California. And when this tragedy happened, the senior monks and nuns came to him and said, "We need to make a statement immediately about this." And Thich Nhat Hanh said, "No, I think instead we're all going to go to the beach." So the monastics went, "Wait a minute. All these people died and we're going to the beach?" And Thich Nhat Hanh said, "Yes, we're going to go to the beach." So they spent a day at the beach, relaxing, experiencing their grief and their anger and their tendency to want to lash out and blame and all those swirl of emotions that the river of events brought to them. But Thich Nhat Hanh knew that unless they had spaciousness, they would be like a machine. They would simply react to that with defensiveness and blame, and they needed time for that to settle. So they spent the day at the beach, and then the next day, they put out their statement. And Thich Nhat Hanh gave a talk in public in which he could speak with love and tenderness and inclusiveness rather than with anger or blame. So those two stories together show me that doing more doesn't always get more done, right? Mazu was not getting more done by meditating all the time. And Thich Nhat Hanh was not going to give a better talk by doing it immediately. He needed time to waste. So it invites me to ask about my life, and maybe you ask about your life. What are we doing that wastes our vital energy so that we can't do the really important things? The laziness of doing too much ox cart whipping. So for instance, do I really benefit by reading to the bottom of the endless scroll of social media? Do I really benefit from dumping 20, 30, 40 minutes into reading story after story after story? Does engaging with everyone who wants to argue with me help? Or am I better off to not do that? Is that just simply another way of whipping my ox cart? How about doing everything on my to-do list? Do I really need to do everything on that list? Or do I need to do the one or two or three things that are really important? I find that happens with me with email a lot. I have some emails that come in that are really important that I answer them well. And yet, because of the tyranny of the number of emails that keep flowing in, I don't end up answering those important emails because it's the ones that just pop in front of my eyes. So maybe there's a question that you can hold for yourself, sort of like my koan, what should I do? Maybe you could ask that question of yourself, too, and wonder, what is most important for me to do? And can I let go of things? Am I actually being lazy by doing too much? Because it prevents me from doing what matters. And so we have to find this balance for ourselves. There is no teacher or book or system of thought or religious practice that can tell you, do this, don't do that. Life is too complicated for that. Life is too varied for that. You have to be able to decide for yourself. And I trust you to do this because I know that each one of us has the internal wisdom necessary to guide us. You don't need to look to somebody like me to tell you. You know for yourself because you have that Christ consciousness, that Buddha nature, that inner light, whatever label we want to put on it. You have that. And that is our guide for doing not too little and not too much. So pick up your whip, but don't whip your ox cart. Pick up your whip, but don't whip your ox cart. Okay, so that's enough words. How about we do a meditation exercise so we maybe feel this for ourselves? That'd be okay? So this is a breathing exercise. So if you would like to find a comfortable position, so your body feels like it's got your, it honors your inherent human dignity. It's balanced with the earth. You know, your head's balanced on top of your neck, which is balanced on top of your shoulders, which is balanced on top of your upper spine, balanced on top of your lower spine, all the way down. So as you find that, I'm going to invite the sound of the bell and just listen to the sound of the bell for a moment. As you listen to the sound of the bell, become aware of the breath coming in and out. Notice that as you draw the breath in, it takes some effort. The effort is in drawing down your diaphragm to pull the air in. But as you breathe out, it takes no effort at all. You simply relax and the air comes out. So our practice of doing not too little and not too much can be just like this breathing. The not doing too little is agreeing to take the next in-breath. It takes effort. No matter what's going on in our life, we'll make the effort to take in that next breath. To be present for the river of chaos that flows by us constantly. That in-breath says, yes, I'm here. Yes, I see. Yes, I allow. But on the out-breath, we completely let go. We breathe in, yes, this. And then we let go completely. But even more on the out-breath, that deep wisdom that's part of all of us, that still small voice, that is what breathes out. It knows how to respond. It knows how to have just the right amount of effort. Not too little, not too much. Our job is to pick up our whip with every in-breath. And then let the ox cart pull itself with the out-breath. Pick up the whip, yes, I allow. And then let the ox cart pull itself. This is the art of not doing too little and not doing too much.